Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, December 16th, 2012. This is episode 936. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com. Click the radio microphone and enter Tech Guy. And by RingCentral. I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. The Tech Guy. Looks like there's a little explosion in a glitter factory here. We decorated the studio for the holidays, and I guess some of that glitter wasn't really glued on well. Well, it's festive. Well, how are you? Let's talk tech. Are you ready to do that? 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you want to call me. We could talk about computers and the internet, cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. Our photography guru, Chris Marquardt, comes up next hour with his photography tips. This is a good time of year to pay attention to that. And we could talk about, you know, holiday shopping sprees if you're about to go on one. So funny, I can't go anywhere now. I was at exercise class this morning, and Mike was peppering me with questions about the Galaxy S3. I wanted to show him the Galaxy Note. This is an interesting time of year for technology. It didn't used to be technology was big in the holiday season because it wasn't really an appropriate gift to give somebody a PC. Actually, a welcome gift, I'm sure, a laptop. But now with these cell phones and other gadgets, iPods probably was kicked it off, right? It's very common to see technology in the under the tree or in the gift basket. A little gift from Twitter this holiday season. They have started allowing people to download their tweets. Well, what a shock. You'd think you'd be able to do that all along, wouldn't you? But just the thing with Twitter is they don't really acknowledge that we own our own tweets. Or at least it didn't until now. Now they do. That's good. Thank you. A kind of a grinchy little gift if you're using Windows Phone and Gmail. Google has decided to turn off ActiveSync January 30th. That's not going to affect you if you use Google Apps for business accounts and you've got devices currently set up to sync mail, calendar, and contacts. But if you get a new device, you're not going to be able to use ActiveSync with Gmail, and that's, frankly, what Windows Phone does. And I think we're seeing this more and more. Twitter and Instagram and Facebook feuding. Instagram turning off the Twitter cards that made it possible to see an Instagram picture in your tweet stream. Apple turning off Google Maps and Google coming up with their own version of Maps for Apple. That came out. That was a nice Christmas gift if you have an Apple iPhone. Much better than the iOS. If you use an iPhone, this does not affect you because IMAP will work. There's also a dedicated Gmail app. But on the Microsoft Windows Phone 8, there is no support for IMAP or CalDAV or CardDAV, which is what Google offers for synchronization. That means if you're using Windows Phone 8, it may not work very well with a Google account. And these are Grinchy moves by these companies. These are not like, well, you know, it was expensive to run it and we did. No. It's more like we want you to buy an Android phone, so we're going to make sure Windows Phone just doesn't work as well. And it's a company acting out of its own business interest and against our interest. And I think that's a mistake. I really think that's a huge mistake. Well, we could talk about that. No, that's depressed. Let's not talk about that. 8888 Ask Leah. Let's talk about the great choices in cell phones you have these days. We could talk about the new Windows 8 computers, the Surface from Microsoft. Surface Pro's coming next year. they didn't really want to try to do that this year. Okay, thank you. What else is going on in the tech world? What other things would you like to talk about? 8888 Ask Leo. Ray Kurzweil is going to work for Google as director of engineering. Who's Ray Kurzweil? Oh, he's a really interesting fella. He created the Kurzweil synthesizer for Stevie Wonder, one of the earliest and best synthesizers. It was used by a lot of bands and groups, and of course Stevie. And then as he got to know Stevie, he realized that it would be really handy to have something that could read text and turn it into a speech. So he created the very first text-to-speech engines that was later sold to other companies. Of course, now is everywhere, and it's a big value to people who can't see to read the screen. It's in your Kindle. It'll read to you, that kind of thing. He became he's an artificial intelligence expert, became a proponent of the technical singularity, the technological singularity. And he says in the next roughly 20 years or so, machine intelligence will be indistinguishable from human intelligence. And that's he calls that the singularity because that's a big change in the world. That's the one where the Terminator takes over. You know, the machines wanted to rule the world. Because once machines are as smart as humans, then they start designing themselves and they get smarter fast. Faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. So it's interesting, very interesting, that Ray Kurzweil is now going to work for Google, who many consider Skynet. he's also, and I kind of like him for this, he's written a number of health books because he says, I want to live long enough to live forever. He thinks I think he's roughly my age, his late 50s maybe. And he says, if I could just live another 20, 30 years, I can get to the point in time where I'll be able to pour my personality and brain into a machine, and the machine will go on forever, and I will go on forever. I've had some debates with him over this. But it's hard to debate because the guy's a genius. And you say things like, well, what about the soul? He says, what about it? Well, is there a soul? We don't know. Oh. Well, we'll see. And I got to give a little tip of the hat to Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri. Senator McCaskill has sent a letter to the Federal Aviation Administration saying the flying public is, quote, growing increasingly skeptical, end quote, of prohibitions on the use of electronic devices like tablets and computers during the beginning and ends of flights. She calls it an absurd situation since the pilots are using iPads in flight and for flight manuals. And she says, I am prepared to pursue legislative solutions if the FAA doesn't act. FAA has created a committee to take a fresh look at the use of digital devices during takeoff and landing. Certainly no one wants a plane to crash because you were playing The Simpsons tapped out on your iPad. But if there is, in fact, no technical reason, and many people think this is the case, to not use these things during flight, especially at Kindle, which really sends out no radio frequency at all, why do they prohibit it? She says, I'm gonna make a law. So for travelers everywhere who just want to read their Kindle during takeoff, for some of us, not me, but for some people, it's a way of handling their nerves. Right, and I always end up buying a paper magazine just so I'll have something to read during takeoff and landing, even though I've got devices that I could read. But they won't let you, will they? So thank you, Senator McCaskill. I think you're right. I think you're right on this one. We'll see. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Mythbusters, Toronto Mario in our chat room. By the way, great chat room. If you ever want to join it, we'd love to have you in there. About 1,000 people in there most weekends. And most of the time, there's somebody in there. It's IRC, because it's an internet relay chat is what they call it. The one of the oldest original forms of chat. IRC.twit.tv. You can go there with a browser. Or if you have an IRC client, we can explain how to do that. It's all there on the page. Or just go to TechGuyLabs.com and click the chat link. That's our website, TechGuyLabs.com. Toronto Mario says, Mythbusters is a show on aviation and technology. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A little Steely Dan. But is that a Kurzweil, Kyle? Is that what you're playing it? I wouldn't know.
Alan Parsons Project.
Oh, it's Alan Parsons Project. All right, iRobot. Oh, I get it. Oh, see, this is the game we play. See, I thought it was a Kurzweil synthesizer, but no, it's iRobot by the Alan Parsons Project. The game we play with Kyle Benham, my musical director, is, and I noticed a number of people in our new Google Plus community mentioned this, that the fun thing to do is to, when you come back from commercials, listen to the song and to try to figure out, why did Kyle play this song? Because you can play, I mean, music's just music. You can play anything that's upbeat and fun. But why? iRobot. Well, there you go. We were talking about Ray Kurzweil, the guy who believes that the machines will become... He doesn't say they're going to be smarter than us. That's not exactly what he's saying with the technological singularity. He says they'll be indistinguishable from human. And he says, and anything after that, it doesn't really matter. If they're indistinguishable from human, then there's no difference. If you can't tell the difference, what does the difference matter? I said, but they're not human. He says, it doesn't matter. They're indistinguishable from human. I said, you can't tell. He said, that's right. And he said, and then they start designing. We use that. We're smart. We're human. Why do all that work of designing machines if the machines can do as well as we can? So we let them do it, and they get faster and faster. And then what? And, you know, there have been movies about this from the very earliest days of movies. RUR was a movie about robots, smart robots. The Matrix, of course, is very well known. Terminator, the whole plot of the Terminator is the machines decided to rule the world. And, of course, Isaac Asimov's iRobot series. 8888 Ask Leo. Caffeine-free Dave says, you can't play Name That Tune because Leo goes too fast. All right, so from now on, what should I do, Kyle? Maybe I'll wait until the next break and say, remember the song? No, see, nobody will be... That won't work. Remember the song 10 minutes ago? No. Taylor, Corona, California, our first call of the day. Hi, Taylor. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey.
Hey.
I'm sorry. I always get so nervous when you're talking to you, the tech guy, you know?
Well, don't be nervous because it's just you and me and a few million nice people. Good friends.
I'm at Preston.
Yeah. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I currently have an old 500-terabyte Seagate hard drive that is almost full, you know, 121 terabytes.
Yep.
And the music I've been working on is approaching the space where I can't easily store it, you know. Speaking of music, mind if I play you some of my work?
Well, we can't do it right now, Taylor, but let's talk about what we do about that full drive. So the issue, of course, is drives do get full. And if you've got a laptop or something where you can't easily replace the drive, or maybe you don't want to replace the drive, so it gets to be a challenge. So, of course, task one would be just simply replace the drive. The good news is drives get cheaper, faster, and bigger all the time. So it'd be easy enough to replace the drive. And no matter who you get the drive from, Western Digital, Seagate, Hitachi, IBM's, they're all the same company now, I think, anyway. Whoever makes the drive... Western Digital is probably the most common, or Seagate. They have software on their website for exactly this purpose, for bit by bit copies. So you'll go to the, let's say you get a Western Digital drive, you go to the Western Digital site, and you download the software. And what it will do is you run it on your existing machine, you connect the new drive. If it's a laptop, do it. Maybe get a. You can buy these. I love these, $30. They're not for permanent use, USB adapters for internal hard drives that turns them temporarily into a USB drive. A lot of companies sell these. I got mine from Newer Tech, and it's a really a great idea. So when you get the new hard drive, spend a little extra, and get this newer tech device. I'll find the name for it of it for you, because it's a really it's a cool idea. They're at Newer, NEWERTECH.com. Let's see. It's called Universal Drive Adapter. This is $39 list, which means you probably can get it cheaper. So the idea, and by the way, it's USB 3, so it'd be really fast. This is the newest one. The idea is you're going to connect this thing up to an internal drive that doesn't have a case. And now you run the Western Digital or the Seagate software, and you can make an identical copy of the internal drive. A bootable copy. It's exactly the same. Then you take the old drive out, put the new drive in, and you're good to go. You're done. So this is it works with SATA drives, IDE drives, USB 2 and USB 3. It's a really clever idea. $25 on Tiger Direct. So there you go. And I think if you went to Fry's or somewhere and you bought an external hard drive, you get that and the drive, it probably is not going to cost you that much more. If you have a desktop, a tower, easy enough to put the drive in the second drive bay and do the same thing. So that's probably the simplest thing to do. I wouldn't use this on a regular basis as a USB drive, but you can buy more permanent enclosures. The reason you don't want to use this on a regular basis is because the drive circuitry is exposed, so it's probably a little bit dangerous. But they make a lot of external drive kits that are not very expensive. You put a drive, you could take the drive, laptop or desktop drive, out of the computer. Put it in this case, and then now it's an external drive. So we're going to – thanks, James. James DeRuvo says $30 at Amazon. He's going to put a link in the show notes, techguylabs.com. Very easy thing to do, Taylor. Bob in Manhattan Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Let me see if I can get this off of a speaker.
That's okay. You sound good.
Am I still with you?
Yeah.
Okay. I've got a Wave Rogue external antenna. It's advertised for being able to be used on your boat. It's 12 volts. It takes Wi-Fi for marinas and close shore stations.
Neat.
And it comes with a router. Everything is 12 volts. And I can get the antenna hooked up to the router, and everything looks right. And then I can get to an outside Starbucks or something. I'm trying it in my car first.
So this is what this is a long range Wi-Fi antenna.
Yes.
So you're in your boat. You don't have Wi-Fi. You don't have internet connection. But you can aim it at Starbucks ashore. How far does it go?
It's supposedly up to 5 miles, and of course, over water it does better. And it's not a directional. I've tried a directional antenna, but that doesn't work on a boat.
Right, because you're going up and down. Yeah.
Yeah. And sideways.
I've never heard of an omnidirectional Wi-Fi antenna going 5 miles. I think that's a little bit ambitious. Remember, you got a little problem here. You're only boosting your ability to receive. You're not, you're not boosting. I don't know if this makes any sense at all, because the Wi-Fi adapter at Starbucks is not more power. So you're just receiving a very weak signal, and I guess presumably sending it. Have you tried it?
I
find it unlikely that it could go. They're actually claiming 7 mile range from a quote quality hotspot. Let's take a break. I'd love to hear your experience with this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Your touch is
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I love it.
And your arms,
we're talking Wi-Fi for boats right now. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic continuous backup to the internet. Just $59 a year, but you can try it free for 2 weeks. At Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo. So, Bob, I'm looking at this. It's, by the way, WaveWiFi.com. Have you used it?
Yeah, it's the Rogue Wave. Yes, I get as far as getting the Starbucks, which is they and I've tried about three different Wi-Fi places, and it seems to get, I hook up, and it should be two-way through this antenna, I would think, for transmit and
Oh, of course it's two-way, but remember, the Starbucks is not boosted. You're boosted.
Ah, so. Well, advertising, they say up to 5 miles, and maybe they're a little optimistic.
They're way optimistic.
I sit right outside the Starbucks, though.
And it's still not working.
I still get through to Starbucks, but then it asks for the server identification, and I figure maybe that gets lost through in the router.
Well, now, you know, with Starbucks, you have to link up, but then you have to open your browser and go through an agreement. You know that, right?
Yeah, I can't get to that part.
I see.
It says it's Starbucks, but then I don't, I kind of hit a dead end.
Actually, yeah, so the issue is there's two, it's a two-way conversation, right? So what it's doing is boosting your end, but because it's not directional, it's omni, it's not necessarily improving the Starbucks.
Their reception.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, it is a bridge, so you still need a router. I presume you're connecting it to a router, right?
Yes, it's a 12-volt router.
Okay, so you got the whole setup.
Wave.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a guy in the chat room, Arbiter, says he uses it and it works. You make the excellent point that on the water, you're going to get a better distance, than you would on land, because there's nothing in between you and the land. I'm looking at the Rogue Wave at wavewifi.com, and they're claiming 7 mile range from a quality hotspot. You should at least be able to use it next to the Starbucks.
Yep.
So I would say there's something wrong.
I'm way ahead.
Yeah, I would say there's something wrong with the thing. Maybe somebody was using it. Clearly this is it looks like a reputable company. They couldn't be selling something that totally doesn't work.
Yeah, I've read Practical Sailor and some magazine articles on it too, and people.
The thing to remember is now. So you got 800 milliwatts, or in some cases with some of their equipment, 1 watt transmitting, right? But it's omnidirectional. So you're booming out. The problem is Starbucks is still, it's one-tenth of a watt or whatever the Wi-Fi adapter is there. In fact, most coffee shops aren't interested in booming out great distance. They want you to use it inside the coffee shop. So it's not in their interest to have a big, powerful...
Right, says you buy coffee.
Right, they want you to buy coffee. They don't want you to borrow their Wi-Fi. So I would guess that, this is one of those things that might work better if there's a nearby yacht club that offers an open Wi-Fi or somebody like that. Starbucks might not be your best choice for something like this.
Now, I've got an option of going directly to it without going through the router, I believe, and I haven't tried to see if it'll go through that way.
You know, it is a bridge, which means it doesn't do any routing on its own, so you need to pair it with a router. By the way, you've inspired me, so we're going to order one and we're going to play with it, and I'll do some reviews on it, because they certainly are claiming something.
There's several different companies that do this, and I've gotten one that's directional and used it when the boat was in the shipyard, and it worked over about 5 miles to a marina across the harbor.
Yeah.
But that didn't use a router. That one was just a directional antenna directly
into your router, though.
My computer.
Oh, your computer.
No, not even a router. Into my computer.
Huh.
And had to. I'm not technical, but a buddy, did the setup, the programmed the computer to accept it.
Right. And basically, what you're doing in that case is you're replacing the internal antenna in your laptop or desktop with this specialized directional antenna, and using the computer, and so basically your Wi-Fi isn't changed at all. It's just using a different antenna. And in order for that to work, of course, you have to have the right connector, because one of the things they've done with Wi-Fi is each unit has a different style connector. So you buy the connector that's designed for your Wi-Fi adapter, and then you put the antenna. Sometimes you have to drill holes. I've seen people drill holes in the laptop case to get these things out. you know, crazy, crazy, isn't it?
Yes, proprietary, I hate.
Yeah, and so I just don't know, you know, certainly follow their instructions as best you can on connecting it and making to make it work. But I've got to say that, you know, it doesn't surprise me that miles away it doesn't work well. It should work if you're sitting next to the Starbucks. It should. And I should raise the issue that it's probably considered fraud. This is an interesting point. There have been people arrested. It's not lately. But for sitting outside a coffee shop and using their Wi-Fi, it is technically wire fraud. So I don't think Starbucks would prosecute. It would be bad for their reputation. It's just something to be aware of. You're in effect, you're borrowing a cup of Wi-Fi. But if somebody has an open access spot, I don't see anything wrong with that, personally. If that's, you know, somebody locks it down, then that makes sense. Wireless wire fraud, next on The Tech Guy. Bob, I'll do some of my research of my own, and if there's anybody listening who uses these things, let me know. iPhone 35434 says he's gotten 3 miles over water. He's just using a stock Linksys router. And that's, you know, that makes sense, I guess. Again, it's about the antenna. And some of these things are using boosters, antenna boosters, to get more wattage. And that's going to be a problem because only you are more powerful. The Starbucks is not. So you need to have a very sensitive antenna as well to receive what's coming from the Starbucks. Jonathan, Salem, Oregon, Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi. My question was that I want to build a new computer, mainly for gaming and for school. And yep. I was looking at the price range of $500 to $1,000, and I have really no idea where to start or what.
Well, let me give you the warning first, and then I'll tell you where you can go. A great resource for how to build your own computer in any price range. But the warning is, when you build your own computer, it's fun. And you can configure it exactly you want, and it's an excellent educational project. But, as many have discovered, it doesn't necessarily save you money, first of all, because you're paying for a part onesie-twosie, where a company like Dell is buying 10,000 of them. So it's not necessarily a savings, and you've got a real problem if something doesn't work, because it's, you know, people will pass the buck. The motherboard, if it's not working, it won't boot up, who are you going to call? The motherboard company, they'll say, well, you didn't connect it right. Or the case company. Whereas if a Dell doesn't boot up, you call Dell. So by buying parts from a variety of different companies, it makes it a little bit difficult if it doesn't work. But again, that's one of the reasons you do it yourself, because you want to learn. Having given you that disclaimer, and if you still want to do it, there's a website I highly recommend. My friend Ryan Schrout runs it. It's called PC Perspective, PCPER.com. And if you go there, it's a hardware review site. It's fantastic. But if you go there, they have a section called the Hardware Leaderboard. Uh-huh. And they just basically, and these guys know what they're doing, spec out 4 systems based on price and tell you what to get. There's a low-end, mid-range. Mid-range is $892, right in your sweet spot. High-end and dream system. And they tell you what processor, what motherboard, what video card, everything you need to know. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. You know what's good? ShareFile.com. What a holiday gift ShareFile is for me, I tell you. I was using a consumer product, which shall remain nameless, to send... so I have to say, almost every... In business nowadays, you're almost always sharing big files, whether it's documents, drawings... video. Of course, record audio, and I'll share that with the radio stations and so forth. A lot of the stations, I'll say, you know, Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy on KFNY, Altoona, PA. And so I have to send that to them. And I'm not going to send them an email, because these are very large files. Plus, it's not secure to send email. Everybody, you know, along the way can read it. And I was using a consumer service, which caused real problems, because, well, I just could go on and on. I just didn't have any, I lost control of it, basically. ShareFile, you're always in control. And ShareFile is much more pro, too. This is my ShareFile. So it has a great little program for Windows and Macs that does the syncing. It's automatic, but I can sync now manually as well. I have 2 ShareFile folders on my system. And so they're always kept in sync with the ShareFile servers. So these files are always here, which is nice, by the way. I can always log into my ShareFile account or use their smartphone apps, and all those files are available to me. But let's say I need to share some files with somebody. Here's a station tracks for WEEU. So let's say I've recorded this stuff for WEEU. Now, if you use Outlook, they have an Outlook plugin that makes it looks just like email. It's not. This is 22 megabytes. On many email systems would reject that. If you're in medicine, for instance, and HIPAA requires privacy, that's another reason. So, but I don't use the email thing. I do this. I press send. Now, I could just send it as an email, but I say, give me a link. And another reason for me to show you this is to show you the options. I can have an email when it's been downloaded. I can require recipients to enter their name and email to let me know who got it. I can expire the download after anything from a day to a year to never. I can say how many times they can download it. So I'm going to say one. You can download it once. After one day, it expires. That's the more. And then I press send file. Now I'm going to get a link. Now this link is great because I'll show you what happens. I'm going to paste the link in here. It sends them to a site with my logo on it, and it couldn't be simpler. There's the file, and there's the download, and that's it. Could not be simpler. They don't have to sign in. They don't have to do anything. And that link is permanent. It's always good. It's really cool. So I want you to try this. If you're in business where you share files, documents, and so forth, or you want cloud access to those files, if you want to preserve your privacy, ShareFile.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use a promo code TechGuy. TechGuy is a promo code. Really a great service. It's from Citrix, of course. ShareFile.com. Give it a try. I think you'll like it. Leo Laporte. I'm white and dirty. A nerdy. Leo Laporte. Hey, tech guy. Going for a ride. East side, west side. Snoop Dogg was across the street last night. Did anybody go see Snoop Dogg and my staff? Oh, that must have been interesting. What a crazy scene that must have been across the street. Snoop Lion, pardon me. Line 5, Matthew, Columbia, Maryland, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hey, Leo.
Hey,
happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Hey, so this is probably the definition of the biggest first world problem. but I have a high-def TV. I used to have an amplifier with a whole bunch of speakers and everything, and big wire mess. The amp ended up dying, and so I decided to just connect my computer speakers into the TV. And that's worked really, really well. I have them over RCA. But the problem is now is that the volume control on the TV does not control the speakers. And so every time I get up, I have to, walk across.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate that. I had that same problem. I got some great Audio Engine speakers. And fortunately, they have volume control on it, but it doesn't work with the remote control. So
yeah.
I have a couple of TVs. On one TV, there's a headphone out. If you connect it to that, it works fine. So look and see if you have headphone out of your TV.
Now, will that negatively affect the audio quality over RCA?
Oh, it's analog. Analog's analog. Do you have it optical? Now, if you have optical coming out of your TV, you can sometimes tell the TV in the settings that I want the... there is a setting that lets you do this. But that's the problem. You need to have a separate audio out from the TV... And if you can just use the analog, then like the headphones, then it works fine. Your TV probably, how did your TV connect to its own speakers? Was it internal or is there an external connection?
They're internal.
Yeah, that's too bad. Because if you had an external connection, you could also use them as like stereo. Yeah. So look for a headphone jack. That's the easiest way. There are TVs you can't do it. You have to buy a little AV receiver. What TV do you have?
It's a Sharp.
How old is it?
Probably 4 or 5 years
old. Oh, it'll definitely have a headphone jack. It'll sound fine.
Cool.
Yeah, and the headphone jack is controlled by the remote control. The problem is the remote control is designed to control the internal speakers or if you're listening on headphones. It is not when you take the HDMI out, if you have ARC, or if you take optical out, by default, it's just line level. Because they think, oh, well, if you're taking that, you must know what you're doing. you're taking it out to go into an AV receiver, and you're going to use the AVC receiver as you used to, and use the AVC receiver to control the volume. But sometimes there is a setting in the menu of the TV to have the TV volume control what's coming out. But essentially, really what you don't want is line level. You want the level controlled by the TV remote control. I would guess, be my guess, that a TV that's 4 years old has an analog out. If you use a digital optical or coax, as Milnock in our chat room says, the volume control often is disabled. Unless you find a menu entry. And I just don't know your TV well enough to know where in the menu that would be. Dale in San Diego. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dale.
Good day, sir. How are you?
I'm well. So you're setting up a home studio, huh?
Well, I've got a client who's going to, as all of us have to do at some point in our life, retire and start to spend a little more time at home. And he uses his voice to make money, and he wants to do some radio spots for clients that he continues to have.
Yeah.
And we want to put together a system that would best do that for him.
You know, microphones are a very personal thing, and they really are dependent on your voice, vocal qualities, and so forth. Because some microphones do better with certain voices and so forth. So you'll see in studios, you go into a professional studio, they'll have dozens of microphones. And the engineer will say, well, let's try this, and they'll move it around. And those microphones can be everything from a $5,000 Neumann down to a $128 Shure SM58 and everywhere in between. And I understand that, but I have to say he's a man, right? His voice probably somewhat sounds like mine. It's probably a baritone. Most radio guys are. Maybe a basso profundo. The mic I use is inexpensive and is brilliant. It was designed by Bob Heil. He's an interesting fella. Sound guy for the Grateful Dead, for The Who, for Joe Walsh. He built Peter Frampton's wah 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 box. He built the quadraphonic sound for The Who. So he's a really smart guy. He's also a ham. An amateur radio operator, and he was very dissatisfied with the quality of microphones hams were using. So he started building and selling microphones for hams. It was his expertise. And then he decided to start doing pro microphones for broadcasters. And in 2005, I won the Best Podcast Award, and the prize was a Heil PR40 mic. And I used it, and I said, this is the best mic, for my voice anyway, I have ever used. It's inexpensive. It's about $300, which is very cheap for a pro mic, and it's spectacular. And so I would certainly try the Heil PR40. You can get it from heilsound.com. It's what I use all the time. In fact, I'm using it now. It is not – you don't find them commonly in studios, to be honest. Radio stations tend to like, I think, a lesser mic, the Electro Voice RE20 or RE27. That's very common in studios. It's often used Shure mics. I think this is the best mic ever, at least for my vocal qualities. I would recommend he try it anyway, the Heil PR40. And what's nice is it's very affordable. What it is not a condenser mic. Now, there's two kinds of mics. There's passive dynamic mics. They don't have any power going to them. And then there's condenser mics, which have to be powered, and they're much more sensitive. They use something called phantom power. And they're very sensitive. So some engineers like them because they pick up every bit of vocal quality, but you also they pick up every bit of the sound in the room, so you have to have a perfectly designed sound booth to use them. The Heil PR40 and most dynamic mics, they are not as sensitive. They are tuned to respond to certain frequencies. In this case, I think the male baritone voice is what this microphone is best at. But they have very good what we call off-axis rejection, which means I don't have to be – in fact, I am not – in a super-duper, styrofoam-lined studio, but you don't hear a lot of background noise because it's so directional. So I highly I love it. It also has – it does something that the Electro Voice do called proximity effect. The closer you get to the microphone, the deeper it sounds. And that's something a lot of people of my age and vintage announcer types like an awful lot. Thank you for the call, Dale. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. today. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. We're talking computers, the internet, home theater, our digital photography guy coming up at 33 and a third after the hour. Chris Marquardt will talk. He's our photographic myth buster. He'll talk about another photographic myth and bust it. Meanwhile, taking your calls, your questions, talking tech with iDoc Mark in Syracuse, New York. Hey, Mark.
How are you doing, Leo?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. I have a question which I think of many, many times during the week, and it never pops into mind when you're on the air.
I hate that. It happens to me all the time.
Yeah, and it just came up again because here I was writing Chris Marquardt on the chat in your chat room on my iPhone, and over and over and over I have to type Chris Marquardt, or over and over and over when I'm sending emails I have to type at twcny.rr.com for Roadrunner.
Right, right. Wouldn't it be nice if it would just remember those with an abbreviation?
Are there macros like that for the iOS? I have an iPhone 4S and I have 5.1 in
here. I know there wasn't 6, or there isn't 6, and I'm trying to remember when they introduced those. Absolutely. Now, I'll tell you what. It's built into the OS, certainly in 6, and I think might even be in 5, but there's a program called Text Expander that's fantastic. So I would check your settings. I don't have my iPhone in front of me, so is it 6 only? Okay, they're saying in the chat room it's 6 only.
My wife, she has a 5.
Might be worth upgrading to iOS 6. Now that Google Maps is out, I don't think there's any reason not to upgrade.
There is. It's called PDA Net.
Ah, you have jailbroken yours.
Until they can do that with, yes.
All right, I'm going to ask the chat room, tell us where in settings that is. Because I don't have my iPhone in front of me. I can't, actually, I have my iPad in front of me. Maybe it'll be there. Let's look. They don't call them macros. They have a name for it. Settings, general. Oh, it's in the keyboard. Of course, that's where it would be. So,
really?
So look under keyboard. And again, if it doesn't, for older versions, I certainly loved Text Expander Touch. It's a great program. I use it on the desktop. So it's in general, keyboard, and they call it shortcuts.
Shortcuts.
So I have one on my iPad, OMW, or on my way. So when I type OMW, it automatically expands it to on my way. So let's say you want your email address. You could do ADDY, for instance, as the abbreviation, and then you type in the shortcut for your email address, and it should automatically just supply that.
That would be so wonderful.
Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah.
Such a time. I have a question, a separate question, but it's real quick.
Yeah.
I'm going to run at 5 o'clock, take the wife to the new Hobbit movie. And this theater has one theater in it says it's got real 3D, but the other one has digital 3D with the high speed.
Ah. So real D is one of the passive 3Ds. That's a little darker because... unless they've invested in dual projection systems, the real D is half as bright because you're only seeing half of the screen at any given time.
Well, the real 3D is the one that has the glasses, which you can't, turn one perpendicular to another.
That's right. It's exactly how it's working. So
polarization.
Exactly. So you know all about that. So that's real D. It sounds like they don't say what the 3D technology is for that other theater. But my guess it would be also real D, because the 48 frames per second is independent of the real D. So
they made that on purpose, and if that's an option, even if it costs a little more, that's the way to see it if we have the choice.
Well, that's what I'm going to do. There have been a lot of people complaining about the 48 frames per second, saying it's too realistic. But you're an eye doctor. I would love – now, let me ask you. Let me ask you, iDoc Mark, what's your opinion of 3D? Do you like 3D?
Personally, I love it because I have fairly balanced eyes. Anybody who can see fairly well and integrate the eyes, if somebody sees okay out of one and okay out of the other and better with both open, then their brain is merging those images and they should do beautifully with 3D.
Now, what about, and you probably heard me read this letter to Roger Ebert, from Walter Murch, who is the king of film editing and an expert on this. He says The big issue with, this is an optical thing, so I think you're the right guy. The big issue with 3D is the convergence focus issues. He says that your eyes are converging at different distances, 10 feet, yeah. 60 feet, 120 feet, depending on the 3D illusion. So the 3D film requires to focus at one distance, the plane of the screen, 80 feet away, but converge at whatever distance the effect is at, 120 feet, for instance.
That's insignificant. Beyond 20 feet, it's absolutely insignificant, and rarely will you sit closer than 20 feet to a screen.
Right.
So you matter a little with television.
It's interesting. So what you're saying is, and of course, we know that the eye, the 3D effect of the stereoscopic 3D effect of the eye, doesn't work past about 20 feet, right? From that point on, aren't you just figuring it out in your brain?
When we sit in a theater and you see, whoa, look at that thing pop out at you. It's fabulous. I see it very easily. Somebody who has amblyopia, where this is where the brain ignores one eye over the other.
Lazy eye, yeah.
Yeah, that's the common term. They'll have a little more difficulty.
I can see it. I just relax a little bit, let my eyes go slightly out of focus, and I do see 3D. I may not be seeing the popping 3D that you're seeing. I don't know, because I'm not in your brain. Now, Dark Jedi in our chat room says, I saw The Hobbit the other night in 3D, high frame rate IMAX. That's the way I'm going to see it on Friday. And he says, I got dizzy. My friends had headaches.
My wife gets nauseous in all IMAX theaters. They're opening one here, but it's not in Syracuse yet.
And why is that? What is the... iDoc Mark, explain this to us.
It's our proprioception. You know, balance is done with the semicirculars in the ears and with the eyes. And when they don't go together... It's weird. It's
same like reason you get car sick, right? Because your inner ear is sensing one motion, your eye sensing another.
Correct, and that'll happen in the IMAX. Can I divert you for just a second before you click off on me?
Yes.
I've got to give a plug. As you mentioned, Roger Ebert. One of the best Audible books I've ever heard was last week. I had to go through it one day. It was a Roger Ebert autobiography.
Yeah.
Which was... plugged by your friend
Andy Iannacco. Yeah, Andy Iannacco is a friend of Roger Ebert's. They work for the Chicago Sun-Times. And yeah, Ebert's book, what's it called? My Life, something like that? I can't remember what it is.
Yes, it's absolutely fabulous.
Yeah. Good. I agree with you, Doc.
I had to rave.
Thank you, iDoc Mark.
Thank you for your answer.
See you in the chat room.
Okay.
All right. I wanted to get someone, an expert, to explain all this to me. So really, the bottom line is, if you like 3D, great. If you don't get sick, you don't get a headache. If it works for you, if you're like Mark, where it just pops out at you and you love the effect, bully for you. And if you don't, then you should see movies in 2D. And I doubt, because of these issues of sickness and headaches and stuff, because of those issues, and it's not an insignificant number of people who get these or are sensitive to these, will always have 2D versions. Because they're not 2D is not going away. I don't think. This high frame rate is interesting to me, and I haven't seen it yet. But the only complaint people have is, well, it looks too good, and you can see, you know, the spirit gum holding Gandalf's beard on. Judy is in San Jose. Our next caller, hi Judy, listening on the News Talk 910 KKSF. Hi Judy.
Hello there, Leo. How are you today?
I am great. How are you?
Awesome. I just bought a new laptop, so now I have two laptops, and I need a wireless router. And between the discussion of adapters...
I will help you. We got to take a break. Hang on. When we come back, let's choose a router for Judy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A little more Alan Parsons Project there for you. Once you start playing the Alan Parsons Project, it's hard to stop. Hey, we'll call it the Alan Parsons Project. So we were talking to Judy in San Jose, and you know, it's kind of funny because it used to be that networking was absolutely like a high-end technical thing to do, and people would get certifications, and you know, you get the IT guy to set it all up for you. And all of a sudden, we're network gurus in our own homes. And it's not easy. So I don't blame you for being puzzled by this. Tell me what you want to do, Judy.
Okay, I have two laptops. One is like 3.5 years old, just to give you some idea.
Okay.
And the other one is the one I just picked up for a great deal at Costco.
Good.
And I don't know. I think it has N, but I'm not sure.
And the older one may or may not. And, you know, N is about 4 years old, so it may or may not have N. So we're talking about the Wi-Fi capabilities, the 802.11. And, you know, these the Internet Engineering Task Force is the one that defines these names. And so there's 802.11B, then there was C, then there was A, then there was G, then there was N, and now there's AC. But N is kind of the most common. The good news is if you get an 802.11n router, you don't have a Wi-Fi access spot yet?
No, I haven't set up a Wi-Fi.
Okay, so that's what you want to do is buy Wi-Fi?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you have an internet a service provider yet?
Yeah, I have an internet service provider.
Okay. So is it a DSL or cable?
DSL.
DSL. So often when you get DSL, you get a Wi-Fi router with it. Does your DSL modem have antennas sticking up off of it?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay. So you just have a basic DSL router. It has a phone jack into it and an Ethernet jack out of it.
Right.
All right. So if you want to go Wi-Fi, you do need to buy. And by the way, this is preferable because you control then the Wi-Fi router. And you probably... I talked about this yesterday. Wi-Fi routers have become what we call a commodity. That is, there's not much to distinguish different brands. It's like buying pork bellies. Doesn't matter.
My gosh, you wouldn't know it to look at Amazon.
I know. It doesn't matter if it's Linksys pork bellies or D-Link pork bellies. A pork belly is pretty much a pork belly. But I'll give you the brands I like.
I like
D-Link,
mm-hmm.
and I like Netgear. I am less of a fan of Linksys. Those are the three big brands you'll see. There are a lot of other smaller brands, but the three biggies are D-Link, Netgear, and Linksys. If you're using Apple hardware, I think the Apple AirPort Extreme is probably the best on the market, but it's twice as much as everybody else, if not more. So it's, you know, hard to recommend.
Yeah, I don't have an Apple. These are all PCs.
So you're going to want an 802.11n. I do not yet recommend AC because nobody has AC hardware. So you won't be able to take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
So again,
yeah, I was recommending somebody.
Go ahead.
Someone recommended that I get a dual band in case I have a lower speed on the older laptop.
Yeah. So here's the deal with dual band. There are two radio frequencies used by Wi-Fi. There's 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. 2.4 is very crowded now because everything can use 2.4. That's the standard band. If you get dual band, you'll have the capability of using 5 gigahertz, and it's often the case, especially if you're in an apartment building or a crowded downtown area, where it's better to use 5 because there are just fewer people on it.
Okay. What about the other thing that you've talked about before that I was concerned about, especially, was the issue of buffer bloat, and if there were any particular...
Wow, you're... All right, now we're getting sophisticated here. That is great. You know, none of the router manufacturers disclose this information, and I'm wondering if there is somewhere a page that lists the routers and how they test out. So what buffer bloat is a very weird thing that happens. And it really affects Skype and other technologies that rely on Ethernet congestion avoidance. The problem is that router manufacturers realized that memory was cheap, and so they started increasing the size of their buffers, thinking, oh, this is good, but it breaks a very fundamental technology in TCP/IP. And and so that's become a problem in consumer-grade routers. Their buffers are too big. And that's called buffer bloat, and it is a problem. But you won't see it surfing the web or email, but you will see it with things like Skype.
Yeah, well, yeah, I run my business off Skype. So.
Me too. So that's an interesting question, and I'm not sure. I'm going to have to – maybe the chat room knows. Last time I checked, and when we did a whole episode on buffer bloat with Steve Gibson, our security guy, we did not know of any way of figuring out whether your router was good or not for it. So I'm just looking now in the Buffer Bloat page on Wikipedia. They do recommend Netalyzer, which we've recommended before for testing your existing router for Buffer Bloat. That's a really great little Java tool that's run by the University of California at Berkeley. But I don't know if anybody has yet published a list of routers that do well. Let's see. I'm looking on the, you know, Vint Cerf and has talked about this. He's the guy who invented the internet or big parts of the internet. I'm going to say I don't know on that one. That I still recommend D-Link, but keep listening, Judy. I'm going to do some research. We will figure out. We will figure out what goes on.
Because that was actually one of the big concerns I have. One other question that's related to this then would also be NAS. Do you have any recommendations in terms of that?
Yeah, so that's network attached storage, and many routers have the ability to plug in a hard drive and in effect give you a network attached storage by just plugging in a hard drive. And if that's all you want to do is have some central large hard drive for storage, almost any router will do fine for that. If you want to use RAID 5, you know, these high-end technologies that mean your data is redundant and protected, then you need to get a network-attached storage device. Netgear makes the best ones, or among the best ones. There's a couple I like. Netgear makes the ReadyNAS. I love those. ReadyNAS. And then I also like Synology, Synology. You'll have to get a four or more drive array NAS if you want to use RAID 5. RAID 5 doesn't work in two drives.
Okay. Yeah, no, I have like a couple of external USB drives. I mean, if I could hook those into a router, that would be perfect.
That will work with almost every router. Just make sure on the box it says USB drive. Some of them have a USB or USB port. Some of them have a USB port for printers as well, which means you could turn a USB printer into a networked printer.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, so this is what you pay extra for, right? There, you know, a basic router is a 2.4 gigahertz 802.11n router. Now you want, you know, dual band. Okay, that's going to cost you a little more. Maybe MIMO, that's going to cost you a little more. That means two antennas. Maybe you're going to want a USB drive. But all of these features can be very valuable, Judy. And I'm going to stick with my recommendation, D-Link or Netgear. Those are the ones to get. And I'll research Buffer Bloat. Thanks, Judy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now, on the line with us right now, you could tell from the music, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Chris is the host of the Tips from the Top Floor podcast, which is a great photography podcast. If you're not listening to that, you're missing out. He also does workshops, all of this at discoverthetopfloor.com, and he joins us every week. And lately, he's been a photographic mythbuster. Hi, Chris.
Yep. Hello. I like doing that. I like taking these things apart and trying to, let the air out of some of those things that we've been told for ages sometimes. Some of the old wisdom is true. Some of it just doesn't really hold up.
Before we bust a myth, I got to congratulate you on your Christmas ornament.
Isn't that beautiful? It's a little glass ornament. It's a Kodak Holiday Flash Brownie. And
oh my gosh, it's almost actual size. That would be a great
one. It is actual
size. Where did
you can actually
that?
Look. Well, from some warehouse thing in the US, and I think I bought the last one a couple of years ago. So we have an entire tree full of them. We have 12 of these little ornaments.
Oh, how cool.
Yes, very, very.
That's
beautiful.
Very festive.
I'll send you a photo once we decorate
the
tree.
That's all I'm going to get, apparently. So, what is our myth of the week?
Well, the myth of the week is, you know how people tell you have to go to a great place to shoot great pictures?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I travel. That's my whole rationale for
traveling. Okay, let me burst that bubble.
I'm not going to be able to get a great picture until I go to the Taj Mahal. Then I'll be a great photographer.
Yeah, well, at least some people feel like that. And I mean, I have to say, that's all great and good, but these locations won't really guarantee you good pictures. You're likely to see and to photograph things that are different, and things that you don't usually see, but that won't guarantee good pictures. Let's face it, if you tend to shoot, I don't know, not you, Leo, but someone might tend to shoot cluttered pictures that don't really speak a clear visual language.
Doesn't matter where you are.
then chances are that these exotic pictures will be cluttered exotic pictures.
It also doesn't matter what kind of camera you have. If you don't have an eye, you can have the best camera in the world. It's not going to make your pictures better. And by the way, I've learned this bitter lesson, spending thousands of dollars to travel and on great camera equipment, and I take the same bad pictures I take anywhere else. In fact, the last time I was in Paris, I didn't even take the camera out of the bag because I thought, well, everybody's getting pictures of the Eiffel Tower. I'm not going to take a better one. I just gave up.
Yeah. Well, my suggestion is, I mean, there's nothing wrong with traveling. I love to travel, yeah, and I love to bring home awesome pictures. But my recommendation is practice in your familiar surroundings. You know, shoot what you know. Open your eyes. Rediscover your backyard or your street or your friends, or empty out that everyone has that drawer full of stuff, you know, little tiny things that you wanted to clean out anyway. Empty that out. Practice to take some great pictures of the things you find in there. Ask a friend to, I don't know, spend an hour with them practicing portraiture. That could be a Christmas present. Give the photographer among your friends an hour of time and say, okay, I'll be your model. You can practice here. Or take your daily, I don't know, jogging route, and instead of running, just walk it with a camera. Walk the opposite direction than you usually do. That'll probably make you see different things. You'll see new things that you didn't really notice before.
Makes a lot of sense, unfortunately.
So, and then,
because I want to travel.
And then with all that practice, it's really important to practice. You got to be prepared, and the only way to be prepared when you then are in Paris under the Eiffel Tower or at the Taj Mahal or at Mount Everest. With all that practice, when you then finally are in that exotic place, you'll be so much better prepared and you'll just come home with great pictures. And the holidays now, that's actually a great time. You spend time shooting in low light around the Christmas tree. That'll prepare you for shooting in low light somewhere on location. Play with white balance while you shoot around candlelight. These kind of things are... This is stuff you can all practice at home. And then you'd be surprised how many times you actually get great results back and good pictures from the things that you're used to.
No, it's really, unfortunately, it's really true. I have a very fancy lens, for instance, that's very good in low light. But because I don't practice with it, I always get pictures that are out of focus. I have to practice with it. Because it's a very delicate focusing.
I know the lens you're talking about. Yeah. It is really tough to focus. Yeah. That needs practice.
Yes. I have to practice. So there you go. Practice, practice. It's the same, you know, as getting to Carnegie Hall. Practice, practice, practice.
I could swap it for a lens that is not as...
Oh, I bet you could. a more forgiving lens? There. Really? You've got one?
Yes, totally. Absolutely.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Chris Marquardt's tips from the top floor at discoverthetopfloor.com. He's got lots of great stuff there, including his workshops and so forth. And we love talking to you. Our assignment, which, by the way, this is one of the reasons we do those assignments. It's not a competition, but it's a chance. It's really a chance for you to take images. And by the way, if you have an iPhone, get the new Flickr app for the iPhone because it will support you in taking pictures. You can use your iPhone to take the pictures and immediately upload them to the Tech Guy group. What is our theme this month, Chris?
The theme this month is darkness, and then I think we'll review them next week and hopefully replace that theme with something a bit brighter, you know, for the holiday season.
But remember, darkness doesn't mean you have to take a dark picture.
No. Don't. I mean, underexposure, obviously you can use that for an artistic purpose, but, well, darkness, I mean, again, you can interpret that in, like, at least five different ways.
Exactly.
So get creative and just try thinking outside the box, and that will probably make a more interesting picture.
Exactly. Chris Marquardt, thank you so much for being here. We always love doing this. Happy holidays. What are you planning? Are you going to be here next week?
I'll be here next Sunday. And moved, my family and I, we moved the whole thing into January. So we'll travel in January and we postponed it for 3 weeks, which makes it much easier. We don't travel when everyone else travels.
That's smart.
It's a family thing.
That's smart. Christmas in January.
Yes.
That's smart. What a good idea. Well, we'll be here. In fact, the Tech Guy show continues next week, of course, December 22nd and 23rd. I'll be here. Also, December 29th and 30th, I'll be here. So no time off. We'll celebrate together. How about that? Take care, Chris.
Sounds good.
All right. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number if you have a question or you want to talk high tech or even ask picture questions, photography questions. I'm not a great photographer, but I'm a dedicated photo buff, if that helps. I know a lot about cameras. Gene in Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gene.
Hi, how are you, Leo?
I am great.
Good. I have a very weird question.
Okay.
Walmart has been advertising, offering the same service as the top national cell service
right. For
a flat rate of $45 a month, and that's unlimited texting and calling.
Right.
Do you know anything about it? I mean, if this is the case, I can cut my phone bill in half.
Yeah, they're what we call an MVNO, which is a mobile virtual network operator. There's quite a few of these. Virgin is one. There are quite a few of them. What they do, Ting, we've talked about before, is another one, is they resell another company's cell service under their brand name. Disney is an MVNO. There's a Disney cell service. In the case of Walmart, they're using T-Mobile.
Oh.
So in effect, that disappointed you, didn't it?
Yeah.
Oh. So if you're getting great T-Mobile service where you are, I like T-Mobile. Nothing wrong with T-Mobile. There are some limitations to what they're doing because I don't believe it includes data for the $45. Let me see. You should check and see what you get for $45. I'm going to go to the Walmart site and see what they're saying. Now, wait a minute. Looks like they're also offering Sprint now. Let me look. You don't have to look into this. It looks like they might be using a couple of different networks. Let me check. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So we're talking about the phone service offered by Walmart. And it looks like when you go to Walmart, you can get phone service from almost anybody. They have the Straight Talk service, which is AT&T. They have, it looks like there's also Verizon Straight Talk. They have T-Mobile. it's very confusing. So I don't know how forthright they are at Walmart, or in fact how well informed the salesperson will be, whether they'll tell you. So what is a MVNO? It's a virtual network operator. A company will buy cell service from a cell company and then offer it under their own brand, sometimes with better deals. Walmart says, we're not an MVO, we're just selling plans. You know, if it's not branded by the AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, or Verizon, then it's an MVNO probably. There are about 50 MVNOs in the U.S. So TracFone, in the case of Walmart, they're selling TracFone, which is Straight Talk, as one of them. It's just very confusing. So the real thing to do is read closely what you're getting and then go online and search and see what people are saying about it. For instance, I've seen there's an article from a ZDNet saying on one service sold by Walmart, I exceeded 2 gigabytes of data and immediately was cut off. Some don't have data. Some don't have 4G. And that would be an issue perhaps for some people. So you got to read between the lines. You kind of need to know what you're getting. You can read carefully. Wikipedia, thanks to the chat room, has sent me to a Wikipedia page for a list of all the MVNOs in the United States. AirVoice, Boost, Black, Credo, EcoMobile, Fusion Mobile, GoSmart, H2O, iWireless, Jolt, Kajit, KDDI, Mingo, Net10, NextG, Page Plus, Platinum Tel, Prepaidia, Radio Shack, Cricket, Ready Mobile, Ready Sim. It's just crazy. And they're all different carriers. If there's a SIM card in your phone, then it's AT&T or T-Mobile. If there's not, then it's Verizon or Sprint. They should tell you, really, because the good news is if you're using a Sprint, you can go to Sprint's website and see what the carriage map is, and you'll get an idea. Walmart Family Mobile, for instance, which is myfamilymobile.com, is a joint venture between T-Mobile and Walmart. Is that the one? you were talking about, Joe? I don't know. I don't know. But I would read carefully what the deal is. How can they offer it for $45 a month? That's a good question. Probably there are limitations, particularly on data. There may be limitations on the kinds of phones you get. So I'm just not sure. Let me look at Walmart, $45. Maybe that'll tell you. Cell phone. Maybe that'll tell me which one you're talking about, since you did say it was $45 a month. That looks like straight talk. Yeah, $45 for each line. Here it is. Be a family mobile. Well, let's see. The family mobile is T-Mobile. And do they say? I don't think they really are very clear about who's providing the service. Talks, text, and web includes family speed boost on first 250 megabytes for 3G and 4G capable phones. Oh, yeah, there it is in small letters, T-Mobile. So, that's one of them, but they will offer a variety of them. How can they offer it for $45? Well, they get a deal from T-Mobile, of course, because they're selling probably a lot. But you should also look at limitations. Read the contract carefully. Looks like you're providing your own phone as well, although they'll sell you a phone separately. I don't know. You know, it's provided, if it's a service from a big company, you're going to get the same service pretty much that you would get if you bought it from that company. 8888 Ask Leo. This is why it's so hard to be a consumer today. It's so confusing. Let's go to Winston-Salem and say hi to Matthew. Hi, Matthew.
How you doing? Hi, how are you, Leo?
I am great. How are you? Happy holidays.
You too.
What would you like? What is your dream gift for this holiday season? What are you asking your folks for? What are you asking Santa for?
Probably MacBook Pro.
Yeah, that's a good gift. And what would you say is your likelihood of getting a MacBook Pro?
I don't really know.
That's a great gift. Now, here's the deal. Here's how you explain this to your folks. You say, you know, I'm going to be the next Bill Gates. If I could just get a computer and polish my programming skills, that's why you need to give me a MacBook Pro. Then I'll take care of you in your old age.
Right, right.
Do you think that'll work?
Wait, what?
Never mind. What can I do for you? I'm just messing. I'm just messing with you, Matthew. What can I do for you?
Okay, I have a blog, and it is. I'm currently on blog.com. It's which is like a WordSpace, platform.
Okay.
Or WordPress.
Okay.
And I'm not very happy with it. I mean, it's a great platform, but it is not what I need. And I was wondering if you could help me. I know you're associated with Squarespace, but
they're not free though. I presume that the reason you use blog.com is because it's free, right?
Well, no, I have a domain. I bought the domain and everything, but I was just wondering. I'm planning to switch. So
what are you looking for? What features would you like, Matthew?
Well, I like sort of like the blog Life Hacker.
Yeah, you want to be like Life Hacker, huh? Well, so here,
yeah,
so
a little
let me
bit like that, or like post format and stuff like that.
So the issue for you is what it looks like is the template.
Yeah, the template and the servers are down sometimes on blog.com.
Yeah, you also want a reliable host, don't you?
Yes, sir.
So, let's talk a little bit about this. So there's two things that you're getting from a site like blog.com. One is hosting. They run the servers, and your stuff is on their servers. The other is the software they're running on. And if you say it's WordPress, that's, you know, that it's a WordPress system. That's one of the many content management systems. You can go to WordPress.com, and that's WordPress as well. But there are other choices. There's Tumblr, which I think is a very good choice for a lot of people, TUMBLR.com. That's also free. There are a lot of templates, and I think that's an excellent free blogging site. Google runs its own blogging site called Blogspot or Blogger. They bought that, and in fact, that's the money from Blogger was invested in to create Twitter. Ev Williams, the guy who created Blogger, then went on to create Twitter. So Blogger, which is at blogspot.com, is a good choice. WordPress.com. These are all free, by the way. And the way they support themselves is usually by sticking ads on your site. I think all of them are excellent, but of course, you're limited to the templates, the designs they offer, and how much you can change it. If you're willing to pay, you want to say pay $8 to $10 a month, you can get a much more varied choice. You know, somebody like Lifehacker is running on their own servers. Certainly my site is too. We pay for servers from a big company. We use SoftLayer. I'm not sure who Lifehacker uses. Lifehacker is part of a group called Gawker Media. So Gawker Media probably has its own servers. And they're running probably custom software, although I don't know. They might be running WordPress, but I suspect they're running custom software designed for the company. But you can get a template that's going to kind of look like that, certainly. So for free, I think you've got some good choices. And I think the four I've given you are great, but there are many, many, many more. If you're willing to pay, sites like Squarespace might give you better uptime. Remember, if you're not paying something, this is something it's important to remember. If you're not paying for something, they're going to have to make money somehow. Nobody can do this for free. So the question is, how do they make money? In the case of Google, it's by putting ads on there. I would guess that's true with blog.com as well and WordPress.com. I like WordPress.com a lot. Because it's using the WordPress software, it's probably the most flexible. There are thousands of different templates. So why don't you try that, Matthew? Go to WordPress.com, set up a blog, and then go out and look at the templates that they offer. I bet you there are a ton of them. And I bet you there's one that looks just like Lifehacker. And WordPress's uptime is pretty good. Blogger is good, too, because Blogger's uptime is as good as Google's uptime, which is pretty excellent. 8888 Ask Leo. Good luck with your blog. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. RingCentral.com. I love RingCentral. I love it. Now, most of you are probably not setting up elaborate business-based phone systems, but if you are, you've already looked into the options, you know, calling your local phone company, and they're going to want to put a box in the basement called a PBX that is costly. You got to get a specialist to come in and program it. It's just a pain in the butt. RingCentral, on the other hand, is all cloud-based. So it's very easy to use. There's no upfront cost, which I like. It's $20 a month per user, and for that you get long distance. You get all of the features you get are incredible. The flexibility is incredible. I'm just a big fan, and I want you to try RingCentral because what we ended up using in the Twit Brick House, and we are very happy with the result. Zero startup costs, no PBX hardware, easy customization. It's great for our producers. The producers love it because they can use their smartphone as a RingCentral phone. They have a phone on their desk. I made sure of that. But when they leave the office, they use the RingCentral app on their smartphone. All the calls are charged to us and it looks like they're coming from our 800 number, our business number. Calls come into, you can program it just like Google Voice to any phone number, so it can come to any phone number. Voicemail messages in your inbox. Faxes in your inbox. That's very nice. You don't need a fax machine. I want you to try it free. Right now, for 30 days, no risk, and they've got a great deal on phones. When you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. So this is a number just for you at ringcentral.com. Call 800-543-9980. If you know somebody who's setting up an office, do them a favor. Russell did me a favor when he told us about RingCentral. Do them the same favor. Tell them about this deal. 800-543-9980, or you can go to ringcentral.com and use a promo code TWIT, and you'll get the 2-for-1 phone offer. Ringcentral.com, use the offer code TWIT, or 800-543-9980. Do not call that number on the RingCentral site. We got a special one for you. 800-543-9980. I really, seriously love our phone system from RingCentral. It's the modern thing, you know? The modern thing. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here. The tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a comment, a question, a suggestion. Sorry, I'm late coming back. I was a little distracted, Kyle. I was playing the Simpsons game on my pad. I did, you know, I was just reading about this. This is an Electronic Arts game they launched in March. It's called The Simpsons Tapped Out. And it was a huge success. Have you played these kind of... It started with Zynga's Farmville, I think, on Facebook, where, you know, it was a kind of a social game. Wasn't much of a game. It was more harvesting vegetables and things, and was decorating and things like that. And they've matured over time. There was Wii Rule on the iPad, which I was addicted to briefly. It's not gaming, says FL Dude. No, it's not. It's something else. I know it's a time waster or something. And the idea is these games are free. Zynga pioneered this. But if you want to advance fast, you give them real money, and then you can buy more stuff. This one, I think, may be the most successful to date. It's from Electronic Arts. Electronic Arts said they have millions of people playing it every month. I'm not sure the exact number. So many so that their servers keep going down. They keep having trouble with the servers. Nevertheless, quite a fun game because the Simpsons characters are in it. And they've seasonalized it, too. That was something else that... people started to realize you keep the game fresh. So in Halloween, they had Treehouse of Horror, scary stuff. It's also a smart tie-in because they mentioned Simpsons episodes. And some of the objects in the Springfield that you build on the iPad are actually from episodes. Here's a really cool house that is from, I think, last week's Simpson episode of the hipsters moved into Springfield. So it's interesting. It's promotional for the show. If you like the show, the fact that Homer and Mr. Burns and everybody else are in the game, which is kind of fun. I'm a little addicted. I do think, though, the funniest part is they have as they do in The Simpsons, they have a Mapple store. Not an Apple store. It's a Mapple store. But just like the Apple store, it's very high tone, very glossy. It's a very seductive game, I'm embarrassed to admit. I keep playing this silly game. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Leslie's on the line from Washington, D.C., where they play games of another kind. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Leo. You're talking mighty intellectually stimulating stuff.
That's high-end stuff, isn't it?
We'll never reach singularity at this rate.
This is what all the CPU cycles are going to.
To the Simpsons game.
The Simpsons game. I can't stop playing it.
Yeah.
What can I do for you, Leslie?
Grab your attention.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, for your own good.
Please, save me.
I have a lot of music on my iTunes, and I would like to back it up. I have a backup, you know, hard drive, and everything's backed up on that.
Good.
Yeah, I'd like to take the music off of the of my iMac. I've got all Apple, I'm all Mac.
One way to do this that I like a lot is offered by Apple called iTunes Match. Are you familiar with Match?
Yeah, I've looked at that.
So it's $25 bucks. Yes, I use it. Now I'll tell you what the advantages are. It's $25 bucks. Mm-hmm. What it does is it's pretty quick because it goes through your collection. Anything you bought, did you buy most of the stuff on iTunes?
No, absolutely not.
You ripped it off
I'm an old person with lots of CDs. I have purchased some, you know, from iTunes, but most of it's old stuff.
Well, the CDs may or may not, in most cases, won't be recognized by Apple, but what it then will do is upload those. So mm-hmm. It'll store everything on its servers. What's nice if you have an iPhone is then you can log into it, and all that music is available on the iPhone. It can download and play it kind of in real time. So that's a nice feature. Yeah. There are other companies doing something similar. Amazon does this, and Google does this, and Google mm-hmm. does it for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's.
But they have a limitation. I mean, according to my iTunes, I am currently using 33.6 gigabytes.
How many titles do you have? That's a lot of music.
9,797.
Okay. So you're going to have to be patient. The good news is you're well under the 25,000 songs. I think Apple allows 30,000. 25,000 songs for Amazon and Google. The Google one is free. Since you don't have if you had a lot of iTunes music, I would say the Apple $25 plan would be a good idea because you wouldn't have to upload that music. It would just say, "Oh yeah, you got that, you got that." Anything you bought on iTunes, it matches without uploading. But since you ripped a lot of your own CD, it may or may not. This is the thing, you don't know. If you ripped a lot of your own CDs, it may have to upload most of it. The disadvantage of the Google plan is you have to upload everything. But then it's there, and it is a backup, and you know you could trust the Google servers not to go away. So, 33 gigabytes that would take you several weeks, but it does it in the background. You just install Google Music on your computer.
I don't mind that aspect of it. What I do mind is the idea that would I have to stream it from the Google?
No, server, you can then download it later.
I can download it to my laptop. I can download playlists to my laptop.
Yes,
and then laptop with me and play it without having to be on the internet.
Exactly. Now, I did all three. I have Amazon Music, I have Google Music, and I have iTunes Match. So, boy, my music is protected, right?
It's just for redundancy?
No, because I had to try it all, mostly. But so if I want to play a song from my Google Music, all the album art is here, all the songs are here, I can just play a song. I believe I can also download. Yeah, I can download the album to my computer or to my smartphone. It'll stream on my smartphone. What kind of phone do you use?
An iPhone.
Well, iTunes. Yeah, iTunes Match has an advantage for the iPhone. There isn't a good Google Music app for the iPhone. There is an Amazon Music app. There isn't a great Google Music app. And iTunes Match basically means that you don't have to put music on your iPhone at all. You could play any song in your collection just by clicking on it.
But then I have to use my data, and I'm
it does
of going over my data plan.
Well, music isn't very big. You'd be hard pressed to go over the data plan unless you did a lot of it. And if you wanted to, you could keep it on your computer and sync it via iTunes or Wi-Fi onto your iPhone. Keep the stuff you play all the time. But then you always have access to it.
An iPad too, I have Apple TV, so
you're kind of in the Apple space. It might be best to use iTunes Match.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this: you know about this iOmega? It's a network attached storage cloud, you know, personal cloud.
Yeah.
What do you think about that idea? I was thinking about getting one for my son, and I'd have one, and he could back up to mine, and I could back up to his, and you know, we would have a protection that was not going to require a yearly or monthly subscription.
Yeah, it's a clever idea. I'm not sure, you know, iOmega has had a up and down, kind of a checkered past. So, this works as long as you got it.
iOmega, but they just happen to be one that I read about.
Yeah, I think it's a good solution for people. It's you have your hard drive, so you have a local collection. The problem is, you know, it's not off-site backup unless you actively do that. You put it off-site. So I'll talk a little more about this when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Why do we fall in love so easy?
888-ASK-LEO. We're talking about an interesting issue. Leslie has a huge music collection. Actually, it's big for her. But there are people in the chat room who have four times the size and more.
That's right. They're probably younger than me, too. So.
No, you know, I mean, 33 gigs is nothing to be sneezed at. 9,000 songs. So the real question is, you know, what features are you looking for? Certainly feature one is you want to preserve it. You don't want to have to, you know, maybe you've saved the CDs, but you don't want to have to rip them all again.
Right. I don't really think I am that keen to stream the music. What I'm really more concerned about is that it's taking up all the room on my hard drive.
Right.
And it's just growing, you know. And my computer's getting older. And besides just having it backed up onto a hard drive, I'd like to actually put all my music someplace off of my computer and know that if something happened to the hard drive,
exactly.
I would still have another
exactly.
copy.
So that's, and that's one of the rules of backup is three copies is the best. Mm-hmm. One copy is not, is unbacked up is basically guaranteed to be lost at some point. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of time. Two copies, pretty good. Three best. One off-site. You're in the right ballpark, exactly. And now, you know, of course, our sponsor, Carbonite, this is how they make their living. But I don't actually say use Carbonite for music because there are so many inexpensive or even free choices for music. Music's kind of a special case.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, as I said, a number of ways to get off-site. I do not like the iOmega or Pogo plug solution.
Okay.
Just because it's dependent on their servers, dependent on them. I think you're best going with Google. And guess, because you're so invested in the Apple space, I think the iTunes Match is a perfect choice for you. It's not expensive.
Right.
$25 a year is going to be less than, you know, it's going to take you, you know, 5 or 6 years to equal the cost of the iOmega solution.
I'm not. That doesn't strike me as being a horrible amount of money to pay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Amazon Cloud is $20 a month.
Right.
A month.
Right. That's not expensive either, relatively. But it's not. You know, the Google one is the best deal. That's free.
Yes.
But I think for $25, you get some other benefits from iTunes Match because you're using iCloud already and you're using iOS devices. All of the songs will be available on all your devices. Not you don't have to download them, but you can.
Yeah.
Once downloaded, they'll stay there for a period of time, so it doesn't take a while to, I don't think it'll use much bandwidth. There's another advantage, which is they match the songs you have, if they can, with higher quality AAC, so with and no copy protection. So for people who bought songs on iTunes before they started eliminating copy protection, it's a way to upgrade your songs to unprotected music, which is very nice.
Yeah. I'm afraid that I actually may end up paying more than $25 a year, though, because of the size of
music. No, it's $25. It's a flat fee, and then it's 25,000 songs. So you got a ways to go.
Okay.
You're safe on that one. I think iTunes Match is the right choice for you.
Well, if that's what you think, then what I'm going to.
And what's nice is now on your as soon as you do it, it'll upload what it can, match what it can. And as soon as it's done doing that, it'll show up both on your iPhone. You'll have to log into iCloud, the same iCloud account on your iPhone and your iPad. But then your entire library will be visible on both those devices. They'll have a little puffy cloud with a downward arrow on the stuff that's not actually on the device. So if you say, gosh, I really would like to hear Bach Magnificat right now. It's on my hard drive, but it's not on my iPad. No problem. You click the button, and there it is.
And it just downloads onto the.
It does, and it doesn't. I can't remember. I think it downloads and stays there. I can't remember if it stays there or if it's just cached, but it's there for a while. In any event, by the way, you can turn off the $25 after a year if you don't want to keep doing it.
Yeah.
I think you're going to like it. It streams it. That's right. Okay. So Mark in Boston in the chat room says, yeah, it does. It streams it. You listen to it. It does cache it. It actually is downloading it and then streaming it. So the next time you listen, it won't download. But after a period of time, undefined, it will go away.
Because I took all my music.
You can delete everything from your computer and you still have it.
Okay. All right.
I think it's a great deal. It's given the fact that you're highly invested already in the Apple ecosystem, it's the right choice. It's the right choice for you, I think. And I would not start messing around with Pogo Plug or iOmega solutions. They're just more complicated, and there's a little bit more risk. I think the Apple solution is a long term safer. Let's go to Canada. Luca's on the line. Hi, Luca. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Luca.
Hey, I was just wondering, sorry, I'm going to cough.
Go ahead, cough. Where in Canada are you, Luca?
British Columbia.
Awesome. What a beautiful, beautiful province.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
I gave my mom my old laptop because I got a new one, and the hard drive is making a clicking noise, and I'm guessing that means it's going to die.
Yeah, usually that's a sign. The clicking can be a couple of things. It could be bearings wearing out, and that's really a bad sign. It means the drive will freeze up soon. Or it could be clicking because the head is moving around trying to read it. It's going, in any event, it does sound like the hard drive's not in great shape. That's not unusual. After a few years, these things wear out. Most laptops, it's pretty easy. If you look on the bottom, there should be a little port with two holes, two screws on it, or more. Remove those screws inside. You'll see the drive. You can pull it out, put a new one in. They're not very expensive.
Yeah, I have a 2008 MacBook aluminum, and I've looked up on iFixit how to do it, and it seems pretty simple.
It is, yeah. So the older MacBooks was very simple. You just pull the battery. On the newer MacBooks, you can't. Is it a removable battery or not?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, that makes it easy. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, if once it's clicking, you probably should get a new hard drive.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And
well, you're a nice kid. You gave your mom your laptop. Now you're going to update her hard drive. Aren't you a nice son?
Thanks.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, should I buy her an SSD or a hard disk drive?
Well, SSD is a lot more expensive, but it's a lot faster. Generally, SSD drives are smaller because they're more expensive per gigabyte, but they are so much faster. It would make a big difference in the speed of that computer. So moms typically don't have a lot of storage requirements. So if she's not filling up that drive, I think an SSD would be a good choice. Yeah, that'd be a good choice. You know, you won't be able to. How big is the drive right now? It's probably 500 gigs, 128.
Just 120.
Yeah, well, you can get an 128 gig SSD. Go to maxsales.com. That's Otherworld Computing. And they have upgrade SSDs for... They make their own Mercury model, which is an excellent SSD. I've bought several of them. I'm very happy with them. And they even have videos in it. And they'll send... And you, what's funny with the drive comes with the tools you need to do the upgrade. Very, very nice retailer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I had to do it just because Leo, he is 35 million views away.
I know. Almost
it
a
might
million.
Happen this week.
I know.
That's amazing. 5 months.
I know.
All right, DSL Extreme here, Billboard.
Oppo Gangnam Style, which is a K-pop song by Psy, is at the YouTube video, the original YouTube video, at 964,509,535 views. It will, sometime before Christmas, cross the 1 billion view mark. No one's ever had that many views on YouTube. 1 billion views. Now, remember, of course, every time you click play, that's a view. And if you've watched it over and over again, that's a view. So I'm told that Psy has made over $8 million on the YouTube video. There's a Petco ad at the beginning of it. $8 million on that video. It's incredible. Are you sick of the song yet? Actually, I'm not. You know, it's funny. I think we started playing the song on my podcast network very early on in its popularity. What were the views at? Father Robert Ballister is in the chat room. He's the host who discovered this video on our podcast network. What were the number of views at, Robert, when you first started playing this song? See, Robert looks a little bit like Psy. And he can do the dance. It was under 10 million, he says. So Robert, you know, you can thank yourself for the 950 million since. It's pretty amazing. And so I've been hearing this song over and over again since almost the beginning, and I'm still not sick of it. It's pretty catchy. It's what a phenomenon, isn't it? What is it that
makes... How much money will he make this year?
Well, you know, the guy, I mean, he made $8 million on the video. So far, Kyle's wondering how much money total he'll make. Who knows? Who knows? It's pretty, it's an interesting phenomenon. What is it that makes, certainly the video was catchy and bizarre. And that was a lot of it. But the I think the key was that the video was compelling. So you watch the video and you're going, what the? Well, this is weird. But then the song starts seeping into your brain. And it's so catchy that you can't, that it gets in there and then you want to watch it again. So I think it was an interesting, it's kind of a perfect storm of a weird video. I mean, it is a weird video. A strange dance and a song that is extremely catchy. 1 billion views sometime in the next week or so. Incredible. Incredible. Whoever had the good idea to make that video and post it on YouTube is probably patting themselves on the back right now. It was published July 15th of this year. So 1 billion views in less than 6 months. Wow. Wow. You know, I remember when I was a kid, of course, you'd have a song that'd be a hit. And it'd be over. You'd hear it every 15 minutes on the radio. You know, the top 40 would over and over. Debbie Boone's You Light Up My Life. Remember that? It was number one for almost a year. You just hear it every 15 minutes on the radio. And I don't think, I really have to say, I don't think that that is anything compared to what we're seeing today. And this, because first of all, it's global. That's why you can get to 1 billion views. It's universal. It's all over the world. We have a special on this, a Twitch special, number 136. Is it involve Father Robert Ballister dancing to this? Not by himself. There's others in this video. Oh dear. I'll leave this. We'll put a link in the show notes so that you can watch it in your own time. Is the sumo wrestling one? If you go 22 minutes into the sumo wrestling one, you'll see a special. Now, but we've got 1,000 views on this. See, this is what irks me. This is every bit as compelling as Oppo Gangnam Style. But do we have 1 billion views? No, we have 1,000 views. Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere. Dave in Missouri City, Texas. That's confusing. Hey, Dave. Hey, Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm better than I deserve, as Dave Ramsey would say. Hey, I'd like to ask a question after my comment about Straight Talk, if I could.
Sure.
Yeah, I use Straight Talk, and we've been using cell phones since Houston Cellular, Aerial, Cellular 1, AT&T, Verizon, and Virgin Mobile, and now I'm with Straight Talk and very happy. I had a regular phone where it didn't really do a whole lot, and I said I'll get a phone that's smarter than I am. And I've been really happy with it.
This is the one that Walmart, among others, sells. And is it AT&T or T-Mobile? Do you know?
You can tell when you buy the phone, the last letter, and it tells you what network it's going to surf on. TDMA, and the other one was,
GSM, TDMA. Yeah.
GSM, yeah, but mine is actually AT&T.
Okay. And how about data? Is the data plan decent? How much data do you get?
I have no idea, but I listen to a lot of radio on it almost all day on Saturday. I kill the battery when I listen to it.
Oh, that's good.
And I got to charge it back up, and it's been straight $45 a month plus the junk.
What's the junk?
I was listening to you talk about it.
What's the junk? What's the junk?
Jet.
$45 a month plus what?
Junk, you know, taxes. And
oh, junk, that junk. Okay. Yeah. That's a good deal. All right. So a recommendation from Dave to our caller wanting to know about, hey, is this possible, $45 a month for smartphone service? Dave says, yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I've been happy with it and trying to find something wrong. I guess the downfall would be their customer service, and they're not any different than Virgin Mobile.
Right.
I've had that. You call in.
They're all terrible. Let me tell you, AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, Sprint, they all are terrible.
But yeah. I'll deal with that for the $45 and unlimited text, unlimited talk, and unlimited texting. I'll deal with that.
Yeah. It's not unlimited data, though, is it?
Pardon?
I think that is a limit on the data.
If there was, I hadn't reached it. But mostly what I do is a lot of listen to the internet a lot on the radio.
Right. That's pretty good, because that can eat up a lot of bandwidth if you listen all day on the TuneIn Internet Radio or iHeartRadio. That could really eat up a lot of bandwidth. So that's very good. Nice recommendation. I appreciate that, Dave. Somebody who's actually using it. Yoni in Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello?
Is it Yoni?
Yeah.
Hey, Yoni.
Thanks.
Hey, Yoni. Oh. Welcome.
My question is, I'm going out of the country. I'm going to Thailand soon. And I was wondering if there is any service that I can use to forward my calls from here to Thailand. Like, you know, either taking my cell phone over there or getting another phone over there, you know, some kind of application or something like that.
Yeah, so you have a couple of choices. If you want to preserve, you know, your local phone number, and I'll tell you what, I'll take a break. We got to take a break, and we'll come back, and I'll explain. I'll tell you a little bit about travel in general, and then what's specific to Thailand. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I don't have any cable on my television. The only thing I need is my fiber connection, because I only want,
you know, it's interesting.
Watching TV.
Because there are so many parodies of Oppo Gangnam Style, and that's one of the reasons I think Oppo Gangnam Style has gone viral and there are a billion views, is that even if you didn't see the original, you might hear a parody like the one we just heard and then go see the original. And one of the things that I think Psy did right is he has not in any way restricted or gone after people who are using the music to make those parodies. He has completely, you know, ignored the copyright, and as a result has made $8.1 million on the video alone. $8.1 million on the video alone. Perhaps he could have made more, you're saying, if he charged license fees and so forth. No. This is the new internet economy. So you have a couple of choices, Yanni. You could go to Thailand with your existing cell phone. If you're going to do, what kind of phone do you have right now?
It's Virgin Mobile.
Okay, so you can't. Sorry, because you have a CDMA phone, and you want to need for travel. You want a GSM phone, an unlocked GSM phone, even a Verizon iPhone, which has a GSM SIM card in it. You could just go to Thailand and use it. You could even buy a SIM card there for local phone number and local service. But your current cell phone, your Sprint cell phone, is CDMA, and it won't work in Thailand at all. As far as I know, they do not offer CDMA service. CDMA is mostly the U.S., Canada, and it's been phased out in Canada. And I think Japan has some CDMA service. So you might want to buy an unlocked phone, GSM phone, buy a cheap SIM card in Thailand that will allow you to use a Thai system. They're about 50 baht, very inexpensive. That'll give you a Thai phone number. And once you have that, then have your current cell phone forward to that number for the time you're in Thailand. You'll still have to pay cell phone call for the forwarding, but at least people will be able to reach you. Your other option, and that's a good option, is to go to Google Voice. That's free, voice.google.com. Set up a Google Voice number. Start giving that to your friends, and you can have that phone transferred to any phone, including an unlocked phone in Thailand. And
I just go on Google Voice.
I'm pretty sure Google Voice will work. It's not an international service, but it will work internationally. So if you have a Google Voice account, you can forward it to your phone. People will call the Google Voice number, not your current cell phone number. Nice thing about doing that, I do that. I don't give out my regular cell phone number anymore because I get new numbers all the time. But I give out my Google Voice number, which never changes. And then I go into Google Voice from time to time and say, now ring this phone when somebody calls that number.
So how do I do it when I get the Google Voice number and I'm in Thailand getting a new cell phone?
You're going to attach it to your Thai cell phone number. You go online to Google and do that. Well, I'm sorry, Tokyo Jim says it will not forward to overseas numbers. That's a problem. Okay, so that's not going to work. I apologize. I think what you're going to... this is a little trickier than I thought. Skype? Yeah, that's a possibility. If you should call Virgin Mobile, and you may see if Virgin Mobile can offer you a world phone that you could use there. And there certainly are smartphone applications that you can use, like Tango, Voxio, Skype. But you'll have to tell your correspondents, hey, I'm not home. You know, you could do that. Leave a message on your cell phone. Say, hey, I'm in Thailand right now. Here's the special number to call. And use Skype. Have them call a Skype number. Set up a Skype call. That would work. 8888, ask Leo if you've got a better idea for Yanni. This is a little more complicated than I realized. So I'm looking in our chat room for Yanni's question. And I think probably the right thing to do is get a Skype-to-go number, not expensive, Skype.com. Put Skype on your smartphone or use a computer while you're in Thailand and forward your cell number to your Skype-to-go number. And that will be a very inexpensive way for you to get incoming calls in Thailand. Skype's the solution. It's kind of similar to what I was talking about with Google Voice, except it works internationally. So, good suggestion. Thank you, chat room. Good suggestion. Then you don't pay those exorbitant overseas roaming charges. That's the thing you're absolutely trying to avoid. Robert in Temecula, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Hey. My question is I have a Sony Vaio laptop. I'm running Windows Vista on it. I don't use it enough at all to actually break down and pay for good virus protection. I recently had a virus on there, and I think it went away because it would not let Windows start up all the way, and now it does. So I'm wondering if it would be a good idea to possibly like factory reset it, because there's really nothing I keep.
If you've ever get a virus, factory reset immediately. Viruses don't go away.
Okay. So
they might hide, but they don't go away. They don't throw up their hands and say, oh, you know, Robert's really boring. I'm going somewhere else. I think the best thing to do would be to do the factory restore, wipe the drive, factory restore. A, it's going to improve the performance of that laptop. It's starting from scratch. But do make sure you run all of the Windows updates immediately to secure that laptop.
Okay. Would it be a good idea, because I don't use this laptop primarily at all for my internet. And when I do use it, it's only for like maybe Netflix and for like applying for jobs or something like that. So I don't really keep any storage on there. If I were to just run that laptop for browsing the internet, streaming music, whatever, like you would an iPad, and never have any virus protection on there, and then anytime it does get a little bit slow or whatever, just continuously factory reset it, would that be, that'd be a good idea?
Yeah, in fact, you might even want, well, if you're going to use Netflix, you probably want to stick with Windows. You could put Linux on there as well. And that's not a bad idea. There's a great program called Deep Freeze from Feironix that will save you time. If you create a clean install of exactly how you want it, that's used in public laptops, public computers, Feironix will reset every time you shut down the machine to the original known state, wiping out any infections, viruses, anything. And your computer will always be ready to go in the morning.
Okay, and I have probably an easy question, but how do you exactly properly wipe a laptop off clean? Because I did one time, I went into DOS and I just typed in format, and I deleted everything on this laptop, drivers.
No, Google this, DBAN, DBAN. It's called Derek's Boot and Nuke, and it wipes the drive clean, and then do the install, and you know you're installing on an absolutely blank drive. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.